So next we'll have Hedwige Lee talking about the Ad Health, which is the National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health. And she's an RWJ Health and Society Scholar from the University of Michigan.
So today I'm going to be talking about Ad Health. I recently received my PhD from UNC in sociology, where I used the data to investigate the relationship between obesity and social disadvantage. And I also worked closely with the PI and director of Ad Health, Kathy Mullen Harris. So I'm going to try my best to briefly describe the Ad Health study design and the four ways of data that are available. So Ad Health is an ongoing program project that began in 1994, and it was developed in response to a congressional mandate to fund a study of adolescent health. It's funded by the NICHD with co-funding from 17 other federal agencies, and the fourth wave of data collection was funded in 2006. So Ad Health is nationally representative, and it explores the causes of health and health-related behaviors of adolescents and their outcomes in young adulthood. It is a multi-survey, multi-wave, interdisciplinary design. And unique to Ad Health, it obtained direct measurement of the social context of adolescent life and their effects on health and health behavior. And I'll show you how this was done when I show you the design in a moment. It also includes unprecedented racial and ethnic diversity and genetically informed sibling samples. So this figure shows the sampling design for Ad Health, and Ad Health is a school-based design. 132 schools were selected to represent region of country, urbanicity, size, type, and ethnicity. And from this frame of more than 100,000 persons, a self-administered in-school questionnaire was completed by more than 90,000 students in grades 7 through 12. In the in-school questionnaire, adolescents were asked to nominate their 5 best male and 5 best female friends from the school roster. And these friends also took the in-school questionnaire, and linking the responses of their nominated friends creates peer network data. All the students in the schools were also eligible for selection into the core in-home sample, and this is a nationally representative sample of more than 20,000 adolescents in grades 7 through 12 in the U.S. in the 1994 and 1995 school year, and this is shown as the main sample. Ad Health also includes special oversamples based on race, ethnicity, and physical disability status. In addition, to enable the analysis of social networks, all enrolled students in 16 schools were selected for in-home interviews, and this is represented by the saturation sample. Due to the race and ethnic oversamples, Ad Health has unprecedented race and ethnic diversity and large numbers of youth and immigrant families. The sample includes an embedded genetic design of 3,000 sibling pairs for which identical twins, fraternal twins, full and half siblings plus unrelated pairs who live in the same household were oversampled. And I just want to point out that Ad Health incorporated biological considerations from its inception by including this genetically informed sample of siblings. And so having an embedded genetic sample enables researchers to sort out genetic from environmental effects and explore gene-environment interactions. So the overall goal of Ad Health is to study how life experiences and physical and social environments contribute to the health and risk behaviors of adolescents, and how those adolescent factors and experience are in turn linked to health and achievement outcomes in young adulthood. So with this design, we're able to fill in the social ecological model of development with independent measures of the social context, including the family, the neighborhood and community, schools, the peer group, and romantic partners. And I wanted to mention that we geocoded home addresses and merged more than 2,000 contextual variables to all individuals in the sample. So this figure shows the longitudinal design of Ad Health. The original in-school questionnaire was followed by 4 waves of in-home interviews, and dates of data collection and response rates for each wave are noted on the far left. At waves 1 and 2, school administrators also completed questionnaires about their schools. Wave 1 also included an interview with a parent, usually the mother of the adolescent respondents. And all adolescent questionnaires were computer-based with self-administration for sensitive content, for example, sexual activity and drug use. Respondent ages and sample sizes for each wave are listed in the red boxes, and loss to follow-up has been modest across waves. The apparent drop in sample size at Wave 2 is by design. Wave 1 seniors were not sought for Wave 2 interviews, but were included in later waves. In Wave 3, romantic partners were recruited to complete a full interview for approximately 1,500 original sample members, and these couples are quota samples that reflect a third each of married, cohabiting, and dating heterosexual couples. We've recently completed a fourth wave of in-home interviews, and this is the conceptual framework for Wave 4. Our scientific goals in Wave 4 were to bring together social and behavioral data with biological data relevant to the current and future health concerns of AdHealth cohorts at ages 24 to 32, to expand collection of biological data to understand genetic and pre-disease pathways with a focus on obesity, stress, and health risk behavior, and to broaden our transdisciplinary reach into biomedical sciences to map health and developmental trajectories across the life course. So this table provides an overview of the questionnaire content across waves. Black text indicates contents that we repeated across waves, and blue text indicates new developmentally appropriate content that we added as the cohort aged over time. So at Wave 2, when respondents were 18 to 26 years old, questions were added about children and parenting and involvement in the criminal justice system. And at Wave 3, when respondents were 24 to 32, we obtained more detailed information about employment and military experiences, added diagnostic questions about substance dependence and abuse, and embedded a couple of cognitive functioning tests to obtain a baseline for future cognitive assessments. So we've expanded our biological data across waves as well, reflecting both developmental change and a desire to take advantage of improved technology to capture a more holistic set of physical measures for our respondents. So first, we continue to follow the embedded genetic sample in all waves, and height and weight have been assessed at each in-home interview, but I should note that height and weight were self-reported at Wave 1, but measured at the rest of the waves. In Wave 3, when respondents are at the peak ages for STIs, we collected urine and saliva samples to test for sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV. We also collected buccal cells for DNA extraction from full siblings and twins who were interviewed at Wave 3. In Wave 4, we added waist circumference to the anthropometric measures to address the obesity epidemic that is well documented in the AdHealth data. And we also took advantage of improving technology to measure multiple indicators of metabolic and immune system functioning in dried blood spots collected from finger pricks. And the indicators measured include lipids, glucose, glycosylated hemoglobin, Epstein-Barr virus, and C-reactive protein. And we also collected blood pressure and pulse information as cardiovascular indicators. We collected buccal cells for DNA extraction for all respondents at Wave 4. 10 genetic loci were targeted for the program project, and we hope to genotype more. And finally, we collected information about all prescription medications sample members were taking at the time of the Wave 4 interview. So given the topic of this conference, I thought I would show the obesity trajectory by gender from adolescence into adulthood using preliminary data from the recent Wave 4 AdHealth data. So in adolescence, 11% of the sample was obese. 5 years later in young adulthood, 22% of the sample was obese. And 5 to 6 years later at Wave 4, 36% of the sample are obese. And there is an emerging gender gap that is significant in the data. So AdHealth is an ideal data set with which to study obesity because it is nationally representative and focused on young people. And this figure shows that the transition from adolescence to young adulthood is an especially vulnerable time when young people gain weight and continue on that trajectory into adulthood. And also, AdHealth has environmental and peer and genetic data to comprehensively model environmental and biological determinants of weight gain and obesity trajectories in early life. So just a little bit more about Wave 4. At Wave 4, we will begin to map health trajectories across the life course to better understand the interplay between environment, behavior, and biology in pathways from adolescence into adulthood. We want to identify the origins of health problems and markers of future disease in early adulthood, and we want to identify the origins of health disparities and what factors cause disparities to persist or decline. So here's the website, and this is the kind of information you can find about the study on the website. And the webpage also includes manuscripts written by the Ad Health team that are intended to inform data analysis. And it also, and until the ICPSR assumes data dissemination responsibility in 2010, there's also downloadable application and contracts and instructions for data requests. So finally, in addition to the NICHD, the primary funder of Ad Health, many institutes, agencies, and foundations have contributed funding to Ad Health over the years, and we want to acknowledge and express our appreciation for their support. And I also would like to thank the IHDCYH Lectureship Program for funding this presentation. Thank you.
Again, any questions, please come to the mic. Please come to the mic.
Some quick question. This is Eddie Ebb from Wake Forest University School of Medicine. This looks like has some similarity with the NLSY data set that is collected extensively over a number of years. So my question is, what is the rate of attrition? Because it seems like you're following up these participants. And the same question is, in your wave 1, 2, 3, and 4,
right,
do you replenish your sample?
Thanks. Okay, so there, I think this is the best. Right. So the rate of attrition is pretty low. I don't know the actual number. But our response rates, if you look on the gray boxes, is pretty high. We don't replenish the sample, so we just do the best we can to try to follow the people that we do have, so there's no replenishment of the sample.
Yeah. Hi. I'm Duipan Bhardwaj from IGIB New Delhi with Inclin. That you showed that obesity, that time dependence from different time point, you are seeing the percentage of obesity. But your samples are multi-ethnic. So is it that totality you are showing, or it varies depending upon the ethnicity?
So if you, so that's the for the total sample. If you stratify the sample, you see overall increases for most groups, not all, but the severity of the increase is different. So in the AdHealth sample, the steepest increases have been for non-Hispanic African-American females. So yes, you do see differences if you stratify the sample. But there's enough people to be able to do that if you'd want to do stratified analysis.
I'm Manoj Das from Inclin. I see the four waves are taken at different points of time. Mm-hmm. Is there some rationality for the difference in the sample collection, or just by design?
Oh, or are there specific reasons for?
One in 94, 95, then 96, and then 5 years of gap again, 2001, 2, and then 7, 8. Is there some rationality behind this one, or?
I should make the disclaimer that I'm a user, so I'm sure that there's multiple reasons for the differences and gaps between collection, but I probably wouldn't be the best person to answer that. Yeah. Did you want to say something about
just that? A brief question. Oh.
Go ahead. I'm Dr. Lakshmaya from National Institute of Nutrition, India. So you have given some behavioral and mental parameters, and what are those parameters you have studied on adolescents and different age groups?
Okay, so we have the CESD depression. We have the components of that index. We also have lots of measures, so I can tell you some of them. We also have measures of physical activity, and we do have crude measures of eating. I'm trying to find the slide that has that. We also have health risk behavior, so there's lots of information about sexual activity, but there's also information about violence and sedentary behavior, such as TV watching, and so there's lots of different measures. I wish I could give you the whole slew of them, but it's large. So if you go to the data, the website, you can get more. We have measures of sleep, Oh, and stress? Right. So I think we didn't have as many measures, I don't think, of perceived stress, but Wave 4 does, I believe, have some of those stress measures. But I would check because I haven't used that data.
I have a question that either you or I see my friend Terry here. When you look at the increase over time from teens to young adults to adults, it's appalling, the increase. And I'm just wondering to what extent such a rich database is used and linked in actual change in policy, actual change in intervention to improve in some way not only the understanding what caused it, but linking it to help improve intervention. Is it used in some way to monitor or to guide intervention design of any type, whether it's school or?
What was that? Is that my question for me? yeah. I don't know exactly, but I do know that there's lots of research that compares ad health to other national data sets, such as the NHANES, and it's used to support the fact that obesity is increasing, and it's particularly important for the younger populations. But I'm less clear about how it's used for interventions in my own work. But maybe you can answer that.
Maybe I can help address that. I'm Mike Spill, the program officer for Ad Health.
And, okay, great.
thank you for the. It is a complicated question. This is service of the scientific community. If you go to the website, I'm proud to note that there's thousands of articles, dissertations, and related science that's come from the Ad Health. But how this kind of thing manifests itself into congressional hands, and then how that goes to policy, is probably open to discussion here during this conference. But what makes it a really rich data set in particular is its primary emphasis at first on the social environment. And these not only unprecedented samples, but how kids were relating to one another and how they thought of their friends and their family is, I think, a very important and sometimes a neglected area in the topic of child health. When we're thinking of just the child as an individual, we need to account for the context, which is moving and shaping their thinking. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you. So I'd say there's been over 400 grants that use the ad health data and over 250 dissertations and over 1,000 papers. So in that way, the information is also getting out there. But, yes, it's really – so the social context was one of the main focuses of ad health, and you can see that when you see the peer network data, the census, geocoded census data, and information about parent-child relationships.
Yong Yun Shin at Virginia Commonwealth University. Can we go back to the plot that you did for the gender?
Oh, okay.
So the gender gap, I was wondering if you controlled for the growth. I'm sure that among females and males, the adiposity growth when they were teens and others are going to be quite different. Mm-hmm. Have you controlled the growth in body fat before plotting this? Is that after controlling or before controlling?
These are just measures using BMI. The only thing we did do was use International Obesity Task Force measures, just so that we could standardize measures of obesity across age groups, since we were looking at teenagers and comparing them to adults.
You have not controlled for the body fat growth among females and males separately, then we don't know whether this gender gap really exists or not.
It's BMI.
BMI growth among females and males may differ.
The growth.
Yeah.
I assume that your prevalence of obesity is based on the NCHS criteria of
yes.
Age six.
Right. And definitely. Right. And those IOTF measures also, so they're taking into account gender and age differences at the same time. So the other thing you have to worry about is comparability by age. So, yes, they're taking that into account.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The monarchies we are recording.
Okay. But
I assume that your young adulthood and adulthood definition for obesity is based on BMI over 30.
Yes.
Correct.
Definitely.
Okay, we should move to the next speaker.
Okay.